Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makwane Maja. Now, we are recording a bit earlier than usual, so apologies if we miss any terribly big stories that may come out this afternoon. But let's get started on our first story, and that is an announcement from Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, who says that he plans to go on a massive roadshow about the National Health Insurance Scheme. He said he's going to embark on this massive roadshow to meet all stakeholders to understand their concerns and learn what kind of universal healthcare coverage they would find acceptable. He also says at the same time he will begin implementing Section 57 of the NHI Act, which is the part that deals with the sort of transitional phase between the current system we have and eventually moving it towards the NHI. This is being described in the media as a major change in his stance. Not entirely sure if that's true, but we'll get into that in a second. Briefing journalist Motsoaledi said, "We are going to implement Section 57, but simultaneously we are intending to run a massive roadshows and workshops to meet all the relevant stakeholders and hear their concerns. Despite the war raging about NHI, you will never hear anyone say they are against universal healthcare coverage. They all say they accept universal healthcare coverage, but there is a big but, and they say they don't support it in the form of the NHI Act. So our job is to find out what form they wanted. What is it that is off the table? Will they go for it if we take out the bad parts?" McCorder, what are your thoughts on the minister's pronouncements here?
I suspect this has something to do with the latest defeat against the NHI that occurred in the High Court between Solidarity and the Ministry of Health. I think that that precedent just cut the legs off of the NHI because what the minister alludes to here is that they will be kicking in Section 57 of the Act, which, as I understand, will kickstart negotiations and moments of transition where they start to introduce that private sector involvement that they keep referring to with respect to the NHI. However, that court defeat, of course, means that the private sector does not actually have to play along with the government, and that the government cannot just simply coerce them to go along with the plan for the NHI. And so I refer to what Julius Malema said about these post ipso facto consultations, that there's absolutely no point to them. All the contestations and counter arguments to the NHI are public information. They occurred, as the NHI likes to, as the ANC rather likes to remind us, over a period of close to 2 decades, where they were trying to table the NHI and they were meeting with various stakeholders, and counter arguments for the NHI were made then, but also that they were tested in Parliament, but the ANC decided, in the spirit of the election, to go forth fervently. And of course, the High Court has set them back significantly, but the High Court was reinforcing this position that was taken by the Concord years ago, actually, that certificates of need cannot be enforced because it would make doctors and nurses and all other practitioners in private healthcare illegal. It would make their businesses, their practices illegal because they have already been operating without said certificates of need. But yeah, I suspect this has to do with the fact that the High Court basically just pulled the rug from underneath the act, and now it's pretty much lost all momentum. And so these consultations are nothing more, I'm sure, than negotiations and attempts by the government to actually listen for once, and I guess proceed, but not as the act had previously stated.
And we'll have to see how much willingness there is actually to change the NHI, but I think this is probably a good sign. To me, this suggests that they are a little bit rattled, as you mentioned, the court defeat, of course, but I also think the civil society reaction to this has been much stronger than they thought it would be. And so this is, I suspect, an attempt to try and resell NHI and maybe give some concessions here or there, although I'm still, we'll have to see whether that actually comes to the fore. And the minister doesn't need to go and talk to everyone in the country again, as you say. Among the groups that sent in submissions on this was us at the Institute of Race Relations, who pointed out many of the problems with the bill. There are an enormous number of issues with this legislation. I mean, I think it should be scrapped pretty much in totality. But if you're going to blunder ahead with it, why don't you go back and actually read the things that were put to you in the consultation process, which, as you said, went on for a very long time? You don't need to have an expensive roadshow. If this is just an attempt to sell the thing so that you can force it down everyone's throats again, then it's not going to fly and the resistance is not going to let up because this is such a disastrous piece of legislation for South Africa's healthcare system. Anyway, let's move on to our next story, and this is related to Bosasa corruption. So, of course, this company, Bosasa, was implicated very heavily in the Zondo Commission report, talking a little bit about how they had created or engaged in an enormous amount of corrupt behavior with various political figures and government departments. And the NPA is now beginning to seize assets belonging to sort of the company and senior executives connected to it. Interesting detail in the story about this is that the person who is basically in charge of seizing these assets does not want to be named in the media due to safety concerns because they are afraid of being killed. So while Bosasa definitely deserves to face the full might of the law and all the people connected to it for the activities they engaged in, the political figures who enabled much of this seem to be walking ahead without any consequences behind them. What do you make of this, McCorney?
Yep, the system is definitely rotten. Also, that this comes 5 years after the commission, it's not very encouraging. Of course, this information has been very well documented through the state capture report. The extent to which the government and various state-owned entities were plundered in collusion, crony capitalism collusion between the state and various members of the private sector. I also wanted to add to the story that earlier this week, it was revealed that Hitachi Power Africa is still eligible for government bids, right? And of course, Hitachi got into a scandal where they were supposed to supply, I believe it was Kusile and Medupi with transformers, but ended up having to pay kickbacks to Chancellor House, which had a stake in the company. Chancellor House is the ANC's investment vehicle company. How can you possibly have the leading governing political party having a stake in a company that then receives billions and billions worth of government contracts, but that it's found to have done so corruptly? It's fined by the United States, and then it's still eligible for government contracts of the exact same state-owned entity, right? So that speaks to the power of patronage and the political protection that that comes with. Because as you've mentioned, there are political ANC members like Nomvula Mokonyane who were implicated in the plundering that happened at Bosasa, and yet there's no indication that they have any prosecutions against them, right? But I also wanted to highlight that the concern of the individual who does not want to be named is very legitimate, because we cannot forget the Murray and Fluta, I believe, father and son duo who were killed for unraveling various companies that were knee deep in government corruption. So all around a crappy story, but also does not inspire much confidence in the judiciary system and its pursuit of those who participated in state capture.
You know, there's a sort of weak talking point that you sometimes see thrown about in by kind of sort of left of center journalists and commentators and people affiliated with the ANC that, no, it's not just in the government sector that corruption is a problem. It's also the private sector too. Well, here we've seen, I think, a really great case of exactly what the problem with that talking point is, which is that people in the private sector, when they do corrupt things, usually if they get caught, they go to jail and they suffer consequences from the law. Whereas political people, people in government, people connected to the country's biggest party, simply manage to skate free without any consequences. So, I think anyone making that argument still in the year 2024, I think, is not being entirely honest with themselves and with the person they're talking with about where the real issues with corruption lie. All right. Lastly, let's just talk a little bit about ongoing municipal politics. So in the city of Etegwini, Durban, the ANC and DA were actually in talks to discuss maybe forming a coalition there. The ANC has almost a majority, but not quite, in Etegwini. They're propped up by a number of very small political parties, of which there are a lot in the Etegwini municipality. After some negotiations where, according to the DA, they basically wanted control of the sewage system because they wanted to address the major collapse in the sewage plant that's been going on in Durban, the ANC told them to go jump. And also with a lot of opposition from these small parties, the ANC seems to have decided that it's not really going to move forward on this deal. So that's quite interesting. But at the same time, the ANC is not just giving the DA stick when it comes to forming new coalitions. In Gauteng, there have been ongoing discussions to get rid of the country's worst mayor, Kabelo Gumonda, who, in my opinion, has caused enormous damage to Joburg. The discussions were between the ANC and Action SA, who basically, it seems, made the offer that they would help support the ANC in Johannesburg in return for the speakership position in the city's council. This would make the ANC far less reliant on, firstly, the small parties and also the EFF, because I believe Action SA and the ANC together have enough seats to govern Johannesburg. It doesn't look, however, like the ANC is giving any ground there either. In fact, Action SA leader Herman Mashaba told News 24, if they have changed their minds on the speaker position, then there is no point in meeting with Action SA. If the speaker issue is not on the table and it's not addressed on the same day as the meeting to remove the mayor, then there's no need for a meeting. So, McCorn, it really does seem like the ANC is remaining pretty inflexible at almost all levels of coalition negotiations. What do you make of this?
Yeah, this is the appearance of giving away power, but not the substance of it. I do think on the Etegwini story that the ANC, if the earlier reports from News 24 are anything to go by about ANC MPs being embarrassed to do media interviews because of how bad they look against DA and, let's say, Gayton McKenzie as a minister. If that story is anything to go by, I don't think they can afford, the ANC can afford to have the DA make them look any worse. And perhaps that's why they're blocking the move for the DA to enter sewage infrastructure in Etegwini. And on the Gumonda story, I think a huge egg on the face moment for Action SA to renege on their founding principle, right, of going into government to oppose the ANC. And then not even be able to get into government, right? Because their terms are that Gumonda must go. But here the ANC is stalling, saying that he should be kept up until Christmas. So I think previously the issue with coalitions is that previously we had to manage the ANC's interests, and they were quite extensive, right? But now we've got to manage interests of all sorts of parties with their conditions for governing, and all the ways in which power is now splintered is being made manifest, and how now negotiations are predicated on power rather than service delivery. And although that has always been the case with the ANC, it was with one party, and now it's just fractured against all these various parties. But that's not an endorsement for the ANC. I appreciate political competition. I just wish it was more issue-driven rather than party interest-driven, Nick.
Yeah, so I think, the ANC still is having difficulty coming to terms with the fact that power sharing actually means you have to, share power. And this is not just a problem isolated to national government where they created this huge bloated cabinet. It's a problem that seems to be completely baked into the party all over the place. But, the ANC was in power for 30 years, so I'm not particularly surprised that this is the way they look at politics in South Africa. We'll have to see if it changes. If it doesn't change, then the ANC is going to be cursed with a lot of unstable, dysfunctional governments going forward. We won't be able to make, I think the whole country, in a sense, sort of needs to almost relearn political negotiation, which is a skill that I think has not actually been that common in South African politics. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.